This is Lars. Thanks again for checking out my podcast. Enjoy your day and the show, and let's make America great again.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen,
you ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars.
All of this could have been avoided if we followed my plan.
Broadcasting from Portland to Seattle and all of Oregon and Washington.
What was it you were saying about my voice?
It's loud, it's strong, and it's good, and I appreciate your support.
This is Honestly Provocative Talk with Lars Larson.
All Americans are rightly disturbed by the large numbers of illegal aliens entering our country.
Now, here's Lars Larson.
This is a very big deal.
On FM News 101, KXL.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Conspiracy Theory Thursday. And yes, I'm live today. I took a couple of days off to enjoy my birthday. Do I sound older? Yeah, I've hit 59. So I guess I'm still about 7 or 8 years away from Social Security, although I don't plan to slow down or even come close to stopping, even if Social Security is still around 7 years from now. And who knows about that? But I did get a chance to spend some time, more time with my wife and with my granddaughter, Payson, who's just a joy. And now back live. And in fact, tomorrow, we're going to take the show on the road live tomorrow from Chinook Tractor in Longview, Washington for the grand opening up there. Come on by and join me and stick around for the cigar event. The nanny police have not yet shut down cigar events. As long as you hold them in the out of doors, it'd be great to see you then. But today, Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Welcome to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. I serve the Pacific Northwest with honestly provocative talk radio, meaning my job is to get you thinking. And if I don't provoke you into thinking, well, then I just don't know what else I can do. I guess I'll have to try harder tomorrow. Anyway, we've got a lot to talk about today, but I wanted to start with an email that I received, and I just got it today. I was answering email the whole time I was on vacation because the work really never stops for the Lars Larson Show. But this one comes in deliberately signed anonymous, and there's a reason. Do you know, these days, American citizens are afraid of their government. In this case, it's a parent who's afraid of the possible retribution that either they or their small children might face if they actually voice an opinion about the way that the schools are operating. This one says, Lars, I'm a big fan of yours. I've never emailed or called in, and I wish to remain anonymous. My child attends Buckman Elementary School. So remember, these are kids from about age 5 or a little bit older, all the way up to about 11. These are very young kids. And after being notified via email by the principal about a parent and a teacher planned walkout surrounding gun control for elementary kids, I decided to contact you. Susan Kazmala's email snippet reads as follows. Recently, some staff and families asked how Buckman would be recognizing the national school walkout on Wednesday, March 14th. One official description of this event is to protest Congress's inaction to do more than tweet thoughts and prayers in response to gun violence. That's a strange term that we can talk about later. Plaguing our schools and neighborhoods. Well, let me stop the email right there. This woman, this teacher, this principal, I'm sorry, is saying that this is plaguing us. As you know, we've talked about it on the show, the number of school shootings is actually dropping over the last 20 years. It is not increasing. But in a media-saturated environment, lots of talk radio, lots of cable news, lots of social media, some events can sound bigger today than even bigger events were, say, 20 years ago. And I could give you a couple of examples from the Pacific Northwest. But they want to protest this gun violence that is plaguing our schools and neighborhoods. Classroom teachers are planning observances in their classrooms or in the community. Observances start at 10 a.m. and last for approximately 17 minutes, and they will not look and sound like 17 minutes of silence. If you as parents want to take your child to participate in another observance, the process will be the same as the typical appointment, sign them out through the main office. Children need not be forced to be part of this one-sided, this is from the parent again. I don't even know if it's a man or a woman. This, children should not be forced to be part of this one-sided, emotionally incontinent brainwashing indoctrination technique. This should be unlawful, and the kids should be protected from this kind of event as it's not part of their curriculum. I now face the choice whether to take my child out that day or not and miss work. Can you get the superintendent on the phone about this or even the school's principal? They are there to learn other things in K through 5. Thanks for all you do, signed anonymous. Now, I'm going to ask for some parents. I want to know from some parents what you think. And I will tell you something that I'm very proud of that I've done for the last 21 years, actually even when I was filling in for Gallagher way those years ago. I always took the position that it is absolutely wrong to use children as political props. And I applied that uniformly. If it was a pro-life protest that I agreed with, I was against using children as a prop. And they can be used as props in that. If it was something I disagreed with, like this, I would say I'm against using kids as props. I don't believe that adults, meaning teachers, principals, superintendents, and school boards, should use your children as political props. Because you see what they're doing? They're doing exactly what television news wants you to do. I used to work with a photographer, and we go to protests. We get sent to protests by the assignment desk all the time. And Don Bauer, former Marine, thank you very much for your service, Don, who now works in another job where he drives a very large vehicle through the downtown areas, and he knows what I'm talking about. He had an attitude. He said, when we show up at a protest, if there are three protesters there, I'm going to shoot 3 seconds of video. If there are 12 protesters there, it'll be 12 seconds. In other words, his standard for covering protests was, you don't just give a minute and a half of television airtime to three people who've decided to paste together signs when you live in the Pacific Northwest, which is the home to more than like 12 million people. 12 million people and you got three people to protest? That's a fringy group, if you ask me. But what they've decided to do, and by they, I mean school boards, principals, superintendents, and the political left who indoctrinate your kids, just as this parent said, they've decided we can get more TV time. If we get the tiny tots out there, if we have them holding up signs that they may not even understand what is going on, tell me, if you will, that a fifth grader has a firm understanding of the Second Amendment or of the various other issues involved in the roughly 20,000 gun laws that America and its states and local communities have. 20,000 laws. And when somebody says extreme violence protection order, Oregon now has that law. Washington State now has that law. Washington State has only recently begun to use the law. And I'm going to mention that in terms of Jay Inslee, the governor of Washington, in just a moment. Do you think that a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old understands what an extreme violence protection order means, or or the various other forms of it? Do you think they understand whether Congress is doing its job or not? Because Congress has said the people of this country do not want new gun laws. They said that even when Barack Hussein Obama had two houses of Congress controlled by the Democrats, and he was ready to sign any gun bill that came to his desk, and he would give endless speeches on the importance of inventing new laws as though one more new law was going to make a difference. No, he understood that he couldn't get it done. And if you think it's going to happen in a Republican-controlled Congress with a Republican president, God bless him, Donald J. Trump, in office, it's not going to happen. So when you talk about inaction, the inaction's been going on for decades. And should it change? Not if the people of this country don't want it to change. So I want to hear from parents who like the idea of their kids being used as political props. And I want to hear from those who don't like them being used as political props. And I'll be glad to take your calls at 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. And we always start this hour with a little bit of nonsense.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense, presented by the Ryan Group, where they guarantee to sell your house in 29 days or less, or they'll buy it. 29andgone.com.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold, hard facts from Lars.
A couple of weeks ago, America's former president, Barack Obama, declared his 8 years in office scandal-free. I beg to differ. The Obama Department of Justice sent more than 2,500 illegally purchased guns into Mexico's ongoing drug war that has taken 80,000 lives in just the last 10 years. It came to be known as the Fast and Furious operation. Since then, Judicial Watch has been trying to get the documents that show how the Obama administration made this happen. But his attorney general, fought the release of that information to the public. Eric Holder became the first constitutional officer in American history to be held in contempt of Congress. Now the new Attorney General Jeff Sessions has announced he will release the documents. Now we can find out what Obama knew and when he knew it, to use a Watergate-era phrase. Obama claimed he first heard about the scandal in the news. You remember the one he can't remember now? Well, now he gets a chance to hear all about it again.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now. Brought to you by Arm Yourself Gun Store in Hillsboro. Proudly veteran-owned and open 7 days a week. ArmYourselfStore.com.
Today's Daily Grill, I award to Washington Governor Jay Inslee for lying to President Trump just a couple of weeks ago about how the Extreme Violence Protection Order law is working in Washington State. He said it was working great. That's what he said to the president. And yet its first use came after Inslee made that claim. And it's only been one use one time. Today's best email, but you can send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Doug writes in from Gresham. Lars, President Trump is so right about our country being ripped off by most of the others concerning trade. Ever try to buy a Harley Davidson in Germany? It's at least double the MSRP in America because of German tariffs. I've known GIs stationed there. They're allowed to buy new Harleys from the German import dealers marked down to U.S. prices. They ride them for a year or two, and when their tour is up, they sell the now used bike to a German civilian for about what they paid for it. I've talked to German citizens who bought these bikes, and that goes to show you what a markup the German government puts on the product. We don't mark up their BMWs that are shipped into our country in such a fashion. We're being ripped off trade-wise in this market. I wonder how many other markets are we disadvantaged in. President Trump's the only president I can remember to call out these atrocious trade inequities and strive for a level playing field. Keep on Trumpin', signed Doug. Back in just a moment. Glad to get your phone calls and emails. It is Conspiracy Theory Thursday. And yes, I'm back from vacation and spending a few days with my granddaughter and my wife. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show.
Excessive spending.
I think spending is too high.
Overtaxing.
You know, there's a federal tax and a state tax and a city tax.
This is government gone wild.
Well, that's all I can call it is government gone wild. Not just the school walkouts that are planned for the 14th of March, but there's a man named Stephen Long, 58 years of age. He lives in his truck. I don't hold that against him, but his truck was parked on a city street and it violated the 72-hour parking rule. In almost every community in America, if you drive into that community and park your car on the public streets in front of a house in a neighborhood, after 72 hours, you're parked illegally. Now, I know you're going to say, but Lars, there are people who park for more than 72 hours. I got a neighbor who leaves his car there most of the time and maybe takes the bus or the train to work. That's okay. In most cases, you don't tag them, but this guy has been living in his truck. Now, would you like to have somebody living in a vehicle in front of your home with all of the attendant problems that may go with that? Trash, bathroom needs, things like that. So if you don't like that, good luck. Because in Washington State, a court has now decided, after Stephen Long sued the city of Seattle and said, it's my home. It's not a truck. It's my home. And the court said, because it's his home, the city of Seattle is now faced with the possibility that they may not be able to tow vehicles that have been parked in front of your house for four or five days, longer than the limit. Why? Because how do you determine if somebody is living in a vehicle or not? Now, I know I've walked past cars and trucks and looked inside, you know, just glance inside as you're walking by and you say, it appears somebody is living in that vehicle. And there are ways you can, you know, kind of observe, see all kinds of things in there, sleeping bags and piles of clothes and sometimes garbage and food and things like that. I'm sure that there are people who manage to fly under the radar. They live out of their vehicle and you could walk by and never even know it. But because the city can't determine that it for sure is not a home, they may not be able to tow any vehicles. That's what the city's attorneys are saying. City Attorney Michael Ryan warned about the interpretation of the law, arguing it could put the city at risk of violating the state constitution every time officials tow a vehicle. So they may have to stop towing all of the vehicles. Now, the next question is, as sympathetic as you may feel toward the people who are forced by their circumstances to live in a car or a truck for a period of time, do you want them living in front of your house for a period of time? Let's go to Marcia, who's in Kent, Washington, listening on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Hey, Marcia, welcome to the program. What's on your mind? Hey, Marcia.
I'm sorry, Lars.
I'd love to talk to you.
I just had a curiosity question. Sure. I have not heard any discussion in relationship to so many of the violent acts that have been going on between the young people today. Mm-hmm. You know, when my kids were younger, there was a great push for medicating a lot of these kids. You know, they were all labeled with ADD or ADHD. Yeah. And so they're all on Ritalin and on Adderall and all this stuff. And when my kids were little, there was a lot of talk saying, we don't know years down the road, because we don't have any statistics yet, about how these mind-altering drugs are going to actually affect them in years to come. Mm-hmm. And I haven't heard any discussion about whether or not this activity today could somehow be linked to some of that.
Oh, we have talked to some extent more about the other psychoactive drugs that they'll put people on who are much more seriously disturbed. And it's not just the concern of the drug they're put on, but also how quickly they may come off of it. Because I've talked to so many treatment people who say, yeah, some of these drugs, they make you feel a little fuzzy upstairs, may be a little tough on your stomach. I mean, there are a lot of other side effects to them that are not all that pleasant. So people who are on psychoactive drugs sometimes decide to quit on their own. And some of the drugs can be really dangerous if you don't taper off of them and you quit abruptly. And I've heard all kinds of theories that say, you know, almost all the school shooters or mass shooters have been on one drug or another. But in some cases, you can't tell because the autopsies typically are not released. And unless there's a court case where there's some kind of testimony given, we may hear that about Nicholas Cruz. Maybe we'll find out what drugs Nick Cruz was on or not on. If he was supposed to be on a drug, and he quit taking it 4 days before he murdered those people at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High, how would we know that? You know, unless he shared that information with the people he was living with, because his parents were both dead. So, and then the other question is, the last stat I saw said America uses ADHD drugs on kids 7 times as frequently as Great Britain does. And Great Britain's a very similar society to ours. You know, it's not like comparing us to, you know, some country that's not at all like ours. So do we know what effect that has long term? Well, there are so many kids on it that if it actually created killers out of kids, I think we'd have more than the awful number of shootings that we have already. So I don't know of any good studies that say if you put 10,000 kids on this, one or two will turn into killers. I've never seen a study that says that. But the very fact that you're using chemicals to alter somebody's mind might make you think it could be happening. Marcia, thanks for the call, and thanks for listening. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. And I'm glad to be with you. I know the last couple of days I've had some encore programs on, and some of the interviews I taped before I took a couple of days of vacation, decided I'd take just a little bit of time to spend with the family, my wife, my granddaughter, and everyone else, and get a little bit of a road trip in. We got to a few places. In fact, I don't know if I got time to tell this story before we get Nigel Jacobs up. Is Nigel almost there? Okay. It sounds like no, maybe not. It's a business story. And there's a restaurant, and believe me, I don't get freebies if we do this. I just wanted to mention this because I saw these people, Todd and Tanya, again last week. Tina had set it up to have a little birthday dinner for me at this place called Nuestra Mesa. It's a Mexican restaurant, and it's in downtown Camas, all right? And we met them a number of years ago because we wandered in and said, well, try this place out. And when we went in there, we got to talking to the young lady, and she said, well, my husband and I own this restaurant, and it was tiny. I mean, it maybe had a dozen tables in it, if that. And so in talking to them, we went a few more times over the next, a year or so, and they seemed like such nice people. And, you know, I don't know much about their politics, but I do know that as a business owner, you take huge risks because you have to decide, do we expand, and will the business come if we expand? Or will we get ourselves in trouble? You see big companies get in trouble this way. You see small companies get in trouble by expanding. But for a lot of people who work for companies, they may or may not understand that the boss or bosses, in this case, a husband and wife team who decided that a restaurant was their dream, that they take big risks. And I'll get to that point in just a second. But I was talking to the two of them, and they said, well, we're debating right now whether or not to buy a freezer. Because, of course, we have refrigerators here at the restaurant, but that means we have to be buying stuff all the time, and it's a lot more trouble to be able to do it that way. And they were just talking about buying a big freezer where they could put frozen stuff until they decide to thaw it out and make it into the foods that they sell, and they sell very well. So the other night when we were in, and this was a few days before my actual birthday, which was the 6th on Tuesday, I was kidding, Tanya about it and her husband. And I said, I remember when you were debating whether or not to have a freezer, because at this point they've now tripled the size of this restaurant. And the night we were in there was a Thursday night. No, it was a Friday night. And they last Friday. And they said, yeah, we're 3 times the size we were. And I said, I'll bet a lot of people don't realize how much you put at risk when you take your already successful business and you expand it to 3 times its size, because that doesn't come for nothing. And they said, well, we were actually very, very fortunate, because there's another restaurant that's more of a pizza place called Tomio's, and they know those people. They're all in the restaurant business, so they're in the same neck of the woods, so they know each other. And they said they were told by Tomio's, the space next to you is coming available, and it's set up as a pizza place, and we know that you want to expand, and we want to expand as well, and we're going to bid on it if you don't. But we like you, and we think we would like to see you do well, and we'll be able to find space. And they literally let them have first shot at it. Now, when I hear that, I understand in business, I have competitors in my business. If you're in a business, you have competitors in your business. If you're an individual worker, say you do sheetrock or you do carpentry, you have competitors. But it's kind of nice when your competitors can work along with you and realize that everybody's, boat is going to float higher if the tide goes up, right? And that's a good thing. So they were telling me, I said, yeah, I remember when you were debating about whether or not you could afford to buy a freezer, which I don't think was a gigantic purchase. But at that point in a business, if you take on some financial obligations and the business doesn't come with it, you could find yourself in real trouble. And I said, it looks like it's worked out for you. And they said, yeah, now we have a walk-in freezer instead of one that's just a big version of what you'd have at home. And they've been very successful. I said, how many people did you have working for you then? And they said, Tanya said, there's Todd and me and 3 employees at the time. And now just a few years later, this little dream they had to start a business has now expanded to 23 people. And that's the other thing that I don't think people think about when you're drawing a paycheck. I think I knew when I started in radio 43 years ago, I think I knew that the radio station had to make money if they were going to pay my paycheck, because I was making $1.85 an hour. I was making big bucks, and that money had to come in the front door for it to be able to go into a paycheck somewhere. Do you think you really realize, if you work for someone else, what it feels like to know that every month you've got twice a month, you have to put your signature to the front of 23 paychecks? And that those people are depending on you for their mortgage payment and their rent payment and to make sure they've got food on the table. And that takes some realization, and it takes some guts to do that, to obligate yourself to say, I will pay the paychecks of these 23 people. Now, obviously, if the business doesn't go well at some point, you may trim back or you may even go out of business, but there are obligations there as well. And I've just always been impressed when a husband and wife team can put together a successful business and they know to grow it. They want to be aggressive as they can, but they don't want to be too aggressive, because if you are, you could find yourself out on a limb and in big trouble. And then it's not just you, but it's the other 23 people you've got on the payroll. So I was very impressed by them. And yes, I don't get special deals because I don't even know how they feel about me mentioning it on the air. But I know that a few of their other customers stopped by and said hello as they were leaving and wished me a happy birthday. And they know what I do for a living. And it was nice to see these people do so well and to see their success. They were bragging on, I think, 1 or 2 of their employees have gone out and bought houses now. And they've said, I've got a secure job working for Todd and Tanya, and now I can afford a house. And maybe someday one of those business employees will go out and start their own business. And that would be nice to see as well, because that's how America does better. Anyway, glad to have your phone calls and emails at 866-A-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. I had planned to have Nigel Jaquess on about now to talk about a story. And it's really kind of a troubling story in some ways, because it's about a familiar name. You may be familiar with him. If you follow the NBA or if you follow political commentary, you know the name of Mark Cuban. He's a billionaire. He owns the Dallas Mavericks, the basketball team. And he's been very, very visible. And he's the kind of guy, they said, literally does a hands-on approach to his teams. And when the whole concern came out about people being treating women disrespectfully or inappropriately, he was right on top of that right away. But there's now a story that's being pushed out again that about 7 years ago that he assaulted a woman here in the Pacific Northwest in a bar in Portland, and that he assaulted her in a pretty grotesque way in front of other people, and that at the time it happened, she didn't say anything. The people around her didn't say anything. And I had planned to talk to Nigel about this story, because I'm kind of wondering why it's coming up again. The thing that, and I really hesitate to say, but let's put it this way. He didn't just put his hands where they didn't belong. He put his fingers where they didn't belong. And I'll leave it at that. The police looked into it at the time. The district attorney looked into it at the time. And they determined there was no case. So you wonder, why is it coming back up 7 years later? Actually, I disagree with a lot of Mark Cuban's politics. On politics, I don't agree with him at all. But he's now being accused over something that allegedly happened 7 years ago that was reported to the police, that was looked into by the police, and both the police and the prosecutors said there's no case there. And it makes me wonder whether or not there are people watching the news saying, you know, there could be some money in a lawsuit against this guy, but we don't have any proof that he did what we say he did. So we'd like the police perhaps to gather that information for us so that we can do that. I don't know if that's the motivation or if it's the same kind of motivation. I will never forgive Michael Moore for the fact that he made my family the target of stalkers a long time ago, more than 15 years ago. Now, am I chasing down Michael Moore, suing him? No, but I'll never forgive him. And I can't help but say, if somebody had done something really ugly and terrible to you, the amount of time that goes by might soften that a bit, but I still think you'd say, if I get a chance to get even with that guy, I'm going to get even. So if this actually happened to the young lady who claims that Mark Cuban assaulted her with his fingers, that I could see her and perhaps the people around her saying, you ought to get some justice. On the other hand, if he didn't do what she accuses him of doing, and the police and the prosecutor said there is no case there to be had, then he's simply being falsely accused. And as a billionaire, maybe it's expected that he should have to write a check to the person who's accusing him, whether it's true or false. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm glad to get your calls live today and tomorrow, live from Chinook Tractor in Longview, Washington, for a little First Amendment Friday live broadcast. And you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you and glad to take your phone calls and emails. By the way, we focus on issues of the Pacific Northwest, but I want you to think about something. With the Trump administration announcing that they're going to take legal action against California and some of its local communities, I think that's perfectly appropriate. After all, it's one thing for those communities to remain silent and not assist. It's another thing for them to actively oppose the enforcement of America's federal laws on immigration. And if you think the federal government shouldn't be involved in immigration and the state should make the decisions about who immigrates here, take a read of that good old-fashioned federal constitution and see where the Constitution puts all of the authority for immigration to the United States of America. We are 50 separate states and a District of Columbia, a swamp, but we are still not separate countries. So those individual states do not have the right to make that kind of decision. And I want folks here in the Northwest, both Oregon and Washington, perhaps Idaho as well, to think about the idea that if you've decided that you're not going to do this, the federal government may come after Seattle and Portland and Eugene and Spokane and the Tri-Cities as well if they decide to try these stunts, like the Oakland mayor, who warned illegal aliens that a raid was coming, who managed to subvert 800 arrests. At least 165 of them are serious violent criminals, including rape and murder and other violent crimes. So do you want the mayor of your town to say, we're not only going to not do anything to help, we're going to actually try to subvert the efforts of police to go after folks who are committing crimes in your community? And if that's the case, tell me that that makes sense or makes your community safer. Let's go to Jim in Bellingham, listening on KGMI. Hey, Jim, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Yes, I have a sort of contrarian point of view to give you. To put it succinctly, you made a good case in that last blurb you were talking about for socialism. You know, the risk of and the failure of business and how difficult it is. And I would like to tie it to global warming because
Where are we going, Jim? I mean, because I'm all confused now. Are we going in one direction? Are we going global warming, living in cars, or the difficulty of running a small business in America?
Well, I'm saying that, to quote Michael Parenti, I believe he said this, that it's not capitalism that got us what we had. It's the fight against capitalism that got us everything.
Okay, I'm really curious. Now you've managed to intrigue me. How do you make money fighting against capitalism? I mean, unless George Soros signs you up for minimum wage to carry a sign somewhere, how exactly does fighting capitalism earn you a paycheck?
It gets you security and it unions with the big
factor. It's union. I should have known it. It's coming to union. So is that why 94% of American private sector workers have chosen not to be represented by a union and only 6% are represented by a union? Is that why? Because they do such a great job?
Well, there's no balance on the radio between you. If you had to debate Michael Parenti when he was younger.
By the way, I don't even know who Michael.
Your interest was.
I don't even know who Michael Parenti. Can I tell you something, Jim?
Not at all. You don't know him. It's a point of view that's other than what you give.
I know the top.
The majority of Americans.
I know the top 100 talk show hosts in America. Most of them, you know, that we know each other. I've never heard of him, but I got something for you on the unions, though, that'll
He's
make
not
you
a talk show host. He's a scholar.
Oh, okay. Well,
and
fine.
And he used to go around giving speeches. And he
how
says,
long ago?
What about, okay,
how long ago?
The thing he said was, most of the world is capitalist and most of the world is poor.
No, most of the world is not.
Hold on,
Jim. Jim, take a breath. Take a breath.
Okay.
Take a breath. Is Russia a capitalist country?
Yes.
No, they're not.
Well, they're
no. And is China? Let's go down the list of the biggest countries on Earth. Is Russia capitalist? No. Is China capitalist? No. South Korea is capitalist. They're very successful. You know, but
so
you look
at all this talk about the Chinese middle class is booming and whatnot.
Well, there are people making good paychecks.
They're capitalist. I think if you talk to people on Counterpunch, which you could call them up.
I don't need to talk to them, but I wanted to tell you something that might actually make you happy.
Know that,
Jim,
you know everything.
Jim, no, I don't claim to know everything. Jim, would you like to hear something about the union movement?
What about the oligarchy?
Okay, Jim doesn't want to engage in a conversation. I do, so we're going to let Jim go, and Jim might just find himself on vacation from talk radio for a while because I like to engage in conversation. Let's go to Rich and Eugene. Rich, what's on your mind?
Lars, have we reached the point in our toxic cultural meme that it's become a hate crime to support and defend the Constitution of the United States?
Yes, we have. If you say that the law should apply to everyone equally, you're called a hater. And yet the Constitution says the law has to apply to everyone. That's the most simple one, and I could give you more examples of that. But when you have a country where, based on your skin color, ethnicity, and nation of origin, you're excused from following the law, and people who don't have that nation of origin or skin color or ethnicity are expected to obey the law explicitly, yes, you're called a hater if you believe in defending the Constitution. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you live on the Radio Northwest Network, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, and glad to take your calls and all. But I just got an opportunity because who was walking past the studio? I get to stick my head out the studio door now and then, and And Sinbad standing out there. How are you, sir?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
Do I refer to you as Mr. Sinbad?
Nah, just Sinbad, Bad, Sin, whatever.
Because I've been watching your comedy for a long time, and I enjoy what you say. You may not be the same politics as me, but that's okay. You know, you got to transcend politics,
but you know what, though? Politics is what it is. Politics has always been that. Look, from the time this country was founded on people fighting, you know? I just think right now we're in an insane place where it's hatred. I think our politics now have caused hatred. We have hatred for one another. And that's where I don't know if we can dig out this hole. This is the deepest hole I've ever seen this country in. And this country been through a lot. I mean, we've had some crazy. We had slavery. We had civil wars. We have Indian wars. We've never been at dum-dum war. We're at a dum-dum war. We're fighting each other over dum-dum stuff.
How do we get there? From your point of view. And by the way, I want to mention, Sinbad's going to be at the Helium Club here in the Portland area through Saturday.
Yep. And I'll be in Tacoma, Washington, March 24th.
In Tacoma on the 24th.
Yeah, at the Emerald Queen.
Very good. I've been there.
Yeah, man, that's my spot.
That's a good place.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you taking a few minutes with us. So how did we get there?
I think the last election, even before winning, what led up to it, it was theatrics. Our politics have always been, look, we used to laugh at other countries on the theatrics. Remember, we never understood how foreign policy worked, how they would fight. France, man, we sit there and laugh at people. Now, we're the ones being laughed at because we're just as crazy. And we got different factions breaking off because I think we got people that ran for office that really want to be in office. We've always, remember, look, either you want to be school president or you don't. I never want to be class president. Look, some people want to do that. There are people who are like, I want to win. They got buttons. I'm like, look, man, I'll help you. I don't want to be class president because then you got to make sure all the reunions. You're the guy that's always got to make sure the high school. I don't want to do that. And so for the first time, we're looking at, I think, some accidental stuff happened.
Well, Hillary clearly thought she was owed the presidency.
You know what, though, man? She messed up so bad. My home is Michigan. She didn't even go to Michigan. She didn't even go to Michigan to campaign, and she lost that state. She should have learned from Obama. Remember, she thought she had that one. And Obama, boom, came through on her. So she thought, this is it. This is it. And she didn't fight the way she should have fought.
Well, she's been around in politics long enough to have known better, though, right?
But no, but this was a new politics. Under regular politics, yes, this was called reality show politics. This became who got the most game. Trump was spanking. He spanked Ted Cruz. He spanked Rubio. He just spanked him with facts, little Rubio. Lying Ted.
But it worked.
It worked. Because know what? Know what it showed me a part of America? It was simplicity. They got beat with simplicity. Just, I'm going to smack you. I'm going to dog you. And know what everybody did? Everybody says, I'm going to take the high ground. I think somebody should have took the low ground. Think about it. If Rubio had pimp slapped him, if Rubio had said, call me little one more time, I think he could have turned the ship around. If he had just said, call me little, if he got in his grill, call me little one more time, and if Trump had backed up, I think Rubio would have been the man.
Do you think Trump's the kind of guy who would back up?
Hell, he can't fight. I used to work for him in the 80s. Trump ain't never fought nobody in his life. He's in the middle. Dude, he ain't never fought. Look at him. He can't make a fist. Dude, when the guy jumped over the fence, remember, he's never fought anyone. He talks tough, but he always sues people. You never seen him, like, raise his fist up. I'll sue you. I'll get him to get you. Man, he's scared of Stormy Daniels. Come on, man.
But I got to ask you, is he doing a good job?
No.
Why not? Because I think he is, and so you and I clearly disagree on that.
Call a good job?
Well, the economy is better, dramatically better. The
economy was getting better before that. He didn't change the economy one year.
You'd give it to Obama?
I give it to not just Obama, things that were happening. Not just Obama, things were happening. Americans were doing certain things. You can't change something in one year. Remember, it takes a year. From here on is where the change from. When you come in the first 3 months, you can't affect the country in the first 3 months. You can't. No one ever has.
Well, let me ask you this, though.
Uh-huh.
See, I push back on that because the day after, 2 days after the election, the stock market took a giant drop.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people had bet the other way. It's like you bet on red,
yep.
and black comes up. It's like, okay, I lost. And they all realize they're lost. And they turn around, and then the stock market took off on a tear.
It goes down, too. He says something. He'll do a trade thing. It drops down. He'll do something else. And it goes back up. Watch it. It's like a yo-yo. It's up and down. And it's not just up. It's up and down, up and down. My thing is, man, I'm just waiting for you to be solid. The thing is this. He doesn't even listen to his people. He's not loyal to his people. I look at somebody who's not loyal to people that are loyal to him, and then he pimp slap them. I say, y'all paying attention? A man is not loyal to people who put everything on the line for them.
So you don't like what he's doing to Sessions or other people?
They actually have, whether I like Sessions or not, these people have followers. This is their livelihood. He just tosses people. Because when you have $1 billion, let's face it, it's hard to be $1 billion. It's hard to be a billionaire and run a country if you've never cared about nobody. Let's face it.
But see, I think he does care about people.
He ain't got no poor friends. Let's get some straight. He ain't got no poor white friends. Dude, I've been around. He ain't got no poor white friends. He doesn't have any. He won't hang out with you. He's uncomfortable. He can't hang with you. No, he can't. He can't. He has
You know
never.
I'm going to disagree with you.
I do disagree.
But I wanted you to come in to hear your point of view.
Until he sits in the room with you, like, really, okay. Until you sit in the room with him. I worked for him back in the 80s, dude.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what'd you do for him?
I was working at Trump's Casino.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a different dude. We don't know this dude. See, this was funny. He's got this whole, a whole racial side of America worked up. All he hung out with was hip-hop people. Dude, he hung out with hip-hop stars. He's when he was on the Method Man's album, one like this. And people knew that. Said, that's what Whoopi Goldberg said. I don't know this guy. I don't know this. This is a different dude. I'm just sitting there like, this is notice. This is like the ultimate circus. And what the doors open is not just this. Watch who runs in 2020. Dude, the door.
Who do you think's going to run successfully against him?
No, I ain't talking successful. He ain't going to be there in 2020.
You don't think
so? He's not. No,
what do you think's going to
happen? I'm going to do the prediction right now. I said a year and a half. I give him a year and a half because he doesn't want to be here.
I think he loves it.
He loves attention. Doesn't want to be that. He likes me in front of
camera. Well, if you're president, you're guaranteed attention,
he likes attention. He don't like being president. He don't like what comes with being a president. That's why he tweets.
You're saying
at night.
The limitations on you?
No, because he don't like being president, dude. You got to be taking care of people and do things for people. Dude, we don't want to do that.
Well, see, I take you know that I've got a different point of view about government. I want government to take care of the things that I need done and citizens need done that we can't do. Mm-hmm. I can't run my own military.
Mm-hmm.
I can't run my own court system or my own, police system.
But they've been doing that.
But I want them to stop doing all the rest of the stuff that the private sector does better.
We say that, but sometimes the private sometimes the private sector leaves certain people out.
Sinbad, if you need to send something really important, do you use UPS or the U.S. Postal Service?
I never can know. UPS too far away. Don't have enough places. I mean,
live in California.
No,
they got
Postal
UPS.
The Postal Service is too inconvenient to send stuff because I go stand in line.
Why do you think you have send? They run the business badly.
But do I say I don't want the Postal Service? Postal Service made us get FedEx. Remember, sometimes you need the monster so the other guy can come beat him.
And then
that's
you
why
get
taxis,
rid of the monster after
taxis
that?
Taxis existed, but then Uber said, I can do it better than you. So you need the thing to get, this is why I can do better than Uber. So that's always been America. Is there another guy that can make it better?
Has the government ever done something better than the private sector?
Have they ever done something better than the private sector?
Yeah.
Military, probably.
Right, but made up of private sector individuals who volunteer.
Sector, but we wouldn't be here if we didn't have a government. Remember, there's rules to everything, schools, everything. Would the private sector go muck if there's no government? If there were no government, let me ask you this question.
Okay.
If there were no government, do you think everybody would play by the rules?
I'm not saying
no
government.
Do you think everybody would be fair? Do you think? I'm with you on less government. Dude, I won't fight you on less government.
But when you got
he's
a hammer
not,
in your hand, everything looks like a nail.
He's not less government, though.
He's cut 3,000 people at the EPA. He's cut other
programs. Environmental protection. Let's get rid of global warming. Yeah, none of that's real. No, nothing's happening. Ain't no glaciers melting. No, that's right. None of that's real.
Antarctica.
Let's have people in charge of education that never taught in school. Yeah, let's put Ben Carson in front of housing. But
you don't like Dr. Carson?
I used to love him. I got an autograph book when I was a kid, and now I've turned my back on him.
Why?
No.
What did he do wrong?
You got a problem with him buying the dining set? He took
over the
cowboys?
Well, I do.
I'm just saying, it's Ben Carson. Didn't even want to, he said, even have a president, he said, I don't want to be in politics. Trump should come. Oh, okay. Dude, it's just, he's there. Yeah, I'm a Rosa. She was just, I called it the Negro in the hall. She just needed a black face to run around the hall. And then Kelly got there and said, we don't need the Negro in the hall anymore. And she was gone. I ain't never liked Amorosa. I don't think she should have been in the hallway.
I agree with you there.
She was a Negro in the hall.
Well, I say it's because she decided to use it for the wrong things, like inviting that bridal party
she
in for a tour
the
of the
Negro
White House.
In the hall because, let's face it, whenever Fox News needs somebody to go against somebody, they find the one Negro who will speak out against black people. But that's something too deep.
But Sinbad, before he ran for president, Donald Trump put black executives in his corporation. And it wasn't for political correctness. It's because they were good.
How many in all his organizations?
I don't have a count of them.
Three, dude.
Three executives?
Three, dude.
What's wrong with that?
Three of all the coins he got. It's like saying, see, that's us black folks. Man, we had two. Man, there's 500 spots. You got two. How many spots you want? I'm not going to fight because I find out fighting with Trump people is a waste of time.
Oh, I don't want to fight with you. I'm not fighting with you.
I don't fight with Trump people because he said something. It was very important. I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and nobody would say nothing and they cheered. And I said, that was a come to Jesus moment that people ain't paying attention. He goes, I could shoot somebody. We're all talking about Time's Up and all these women, but he's the only one that's not lying. They're going after every man. Let's face it. Every man, if a woman says, he touched me, boom, loses his job. Trump, no, he wouldn't do that. Stormy Daniels, dude, he knows he's there. He got pictures with her. Dude, they're trying to, I'm like this dude. I give him more credit to say, yeah, I slept with Stormy. Dude, just get out the way. You Donald Trump. So far, you've been untouchable. Dude, I'll wait for him to say, yeah, I like porn stars. The country would go like, yeah, what's wrong with loving porn stars? I'm telling you, man. He's not understanding his power. He should just say, yes, I slept with Stormy Daniels. Look at her chest. And everybody would be like, I understand that. And even the women that follow would be like, yeah, she is kind of chest endowed. And life would go on. Trust me on that. Trust me on that, man.
Sinbad's going to be at the Helium Club tonight through Saturday night and then in Tacoma on the 24th. Sinbad, it's a pleasure. You and I may disagree on politics, but
we can still live. Like this, we're supposed to disagree on stuff and still be able to live. That's what I'm scared about this time. Man, you walk, it's like walking into Starbucks, somebody goes, who'd you vote for? And then they show you a gun. It's like, whoa. It's the first time that families are split up. Remember, families are breaking up on this. I said, I've never seen this. I don't know where it goes. I don't know where this goes, though.
That's
the thing about it. We don't know.
But you said you've got a prediction. He's gone in here.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. There's a thing in motion now that I think Pandora's box is open. Who knows? Kanye may run for president too. Dude, he said it. He said he was going, dude, I'm telling you right now, Stacey Dash is running for office.
That's crazy.
Dude, I'm like, oh my God. We're gonna be like watching Looney Tunes.
The clueless candidates.
Yes, the clueless candidates.
Sinbad, it's a pleasure. Thanks so much. Take care now. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get back to your phone calls and emails. It's been a target-rich environment today. And on that note, I go to Cody Wilson, who is the managing director for Defense Distributed. Now, that may not ring a bell, but the term ghost gun might. Mr. Wilson, thank you for taking the time.
Hey, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Would you mind describing what Defense Distributed has done in coming up with a design that's a very controversial design for a printable firearm, a digital gun?
Yeah, that's the history of our company, using digital technologies and the internet to experiment with creating guns for yourself, for the American rifleman, and people all over the world, using the internet and other free technologies to help you do that without needing to buy a gun, without needing to talk to the government about permissions and registrations and serialization. And we've developed all kinds of things in the many years since we began.
And in fact, You've got a current legal case that's going because the government is trying to say you can't even share these plans, right?
I know. This is something that the normal American would say if you told them this is happening. They would say, well, that's impossible. I have a First Amendment. I have a Second Amendment. I should be able to share plans related to guns with my friends and use the internet to learn about guns. But actually, no. The prime contractors and the U.S. State Department have been fighting us on this point for 3 or 4 years now in the federal courts. So it's one of the lingering legacies of the Obama years.
Well, and in fact, just so people understand what we're talking about, I own several AR-15s, and I've told my audience that. And one of them was a lower that I bought from a friend who was manufacturing them at the time. The thing that you're able to make, the Liberator, or the plans are that you can run it into a CNC machine, a computer numerical control machine, and turn out a lower for an AR-15, and it doesn't have to have a federal serial number on it. Have I missed anything there?
No, you haven't. That's our flagship product. That's called the Ghost Gunner CNC. It's at ghostgunner.net. Yeah, it's a little device that's built to make and finish what are called 80% or unfinished receivers. Popular unfinished receivers are the AR-15, the AR-10, different handguns like the 1911. And right, we've really pioneered a way that you can quickly and automatedly to machine tolerances, you know, perform this work. And when you make a gun yourself, this is the whole thing in America. People are still like, what? When you make a gun yourself, there's no requirement to serialize it. There's no requirement to tell anyone about it because that only applies to registered and licensed manufacturers.
Now, there are a couple limitations on that. If I make one of those, can I sell it to anyone?
I'm going to tell you probably that you can. What the ATF cares about, and what Obama tried to scare everybody about last year before he left, was when you get into the business of selling guns and distributing guns, when you begin to do it for profit and you begin to do it multiple times, then the ATF wants you to get a license to deal or to manufacture weapons. And that makes sense. But like any other piece of property in America, if you own it, you can give it to someone or you can sell it to someone. It's just you can't get into the business of doing it without a license.
So you could make one, and if someday you pass away, you could pass it on to the folks behind. But you can't go into the business of making them in quantity.
I should point out I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah, neither am I.
Some of these things vary by state. Like California is certainly much more severe about what type of gun you make and when you make it and stuff. But no, for the most part, it's always been the case in the United States that if you're allowed to otherwise own the gun, like if you're not a fugitive from justice or someone and disqualified from owning a gun, whatever type of gun you're allowed to own, you're allowed to make it just the same and do anything else with it that you would, just like any other piece of property.
Now, what happens to the legal case at this point? I got about 20 seconds left.
Look, man, I'm back in Austin. I'll head back to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. Hopefully you'll hear that, sharing 3D printed gun files on the internet is legal. And that's the work that we're committed to doing at Defense Distributed.
Mr. Wilson, it's a pleasure. We'll have you back, and thank you so much for your time today.
The pleasure is mine. Thank you.
Glad to have you with us. Cody Wilson, who is a managing director for Defense Distributed. We'll be back in a moment. I'm glad to get your phone calls and emails at 866-439-5277. We're back live today. I was off for a couple of days. We're live around the Pacific Northwest on the Radio Northwest Network, and this is the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, live on the Radio Northwest Network. And by the way, we'll be doing First Amendment Friday live from Longview, Washington at Chinook Tractor. It's their grand opening, so we're going to be up there, and they're a great supporter of the show. I'd love to have you come by. We're going to do both radio shows there and do a little cigar event tomorrow night as well on First Amendment Friday. I want to tell you something. I'm really always amazed when I put stuff on Twitter. Usually, almost everybody on our Twitter account, at Lars Larson Show, will say, oh, I recognize that issue. I bring up Fast and Furious. I'm still amazed at the number of people who don't seem to remember what happened when the Obama administration allowed its Department of Justice to send literally thousands of firearms illegally into a Mexican drug war that has already killed more than 80,000 people in the last 10 years. It is an incredibly deadly environment. And the fact that they did this, and I think they did it for political reasons that I can explain, really bothers me. But we never really found out who said yes to this, who made this happen, and when are we going to find out what really happened? Well, it appears that maybe now we're going to see the real information, as the DOJ today is saying that it's going to release the rest of these documents. We'll find out what role Eric Holder, the attorney general, played and what the president might have known or not known. And on that note, our law enforcement expert, Bernie Giusto, joins me now, retired Multnomah County Sheriff. Bernie, welcome back to the program. And what should we have thought when the American government dumped thousands of guns into a drug war?
Well, Lars, I don't know that we would have thought much of anything, since they tried to cover it up once the death of Brian Terry, a U.S. Border Patrol agent, happened in on December 15, 2010. So from that point forward, the American public either was completely shut out or was certainly confused by what was going on between Department of Justice, ATF, and Congress. And it was an obvious, and it is obvious to me after 35 years in law enforcement, an obvious attempt to cover up, which was a very poorly thought out tactical operation.
And I guess what I wonder is, if we find out after the fact now that the administration allowed guns to go illegally into a drug war for no real discernible reason, is there any chance anybody's going to see any jail time or be prosecuted for this? Because as you point out, it led to the death of at least one American, and as I understand the numbers, 300 to 400 Mexican nationals.
Yeah, so we're talking about 2,000 guns were sent across into Mexico in the operation called Fast and Furious. And these guns were actually ordered to be sold from federally licensed dealers to straw buyers and then disappeared over the border. I have no idea who in the right mind thinks you could release 2,000 guns into this country and keep track of them, or especially into Mexico and keep track of them, unless they were electronically laced. Even then, it made no sense. There were whoever, again, the What it tells me is that somebody without any tactical background made the decisions. And although the government, our government, tried to blame the field office in Phoenix for this and the ATF agents on the ground, it really came right out of the front office of Department of Justice and a guy by the name of Lanny Brewer, who is the person who testified before Congress and was called out as a liar by Senator Chuck Grassley and asked for his resignation, which he did in 2013 and went back to the private sector.
Well, see, and that's the question I'm wondering about is does anybody get prosecuted for this? Because as you point out, there are folks, in fact, Bernie, when I posted after I heard the news last night that this document release is going to happen at some point, folks said, well, don't you remember Operation, what was it? It was Quarterback. And I think it was Quarterback. Anyway, yeah. It was under the Bush administration. And I guess that's the proof that this thing under Obama had no connection to trying to trace the weapons, because that operation was done by the Bush administration. They did it in cooperation with the knowledge of the Mexican government, said, we're going to send guns over. They should be traceable. You keep an eye on them after they get on your side of the border. And then you let us know where they turn up. And that'll tell us more about how, you know, guns and other contraband make their way into Mexico. And they found it was a total failure. Maybe it was Quarterback. Anyway, they when they found out it was a failure, they shut it down early. Well, then the Obama administration came in and said, well, we're going to do that again, except we're not going to tell the Mexican government we're doing it. We're not going to do it with their cooperation. And in theory, we're going to keep track of 2,500 or 2,400 guns that we send in there. Well, if it failed when the Mexican government was cooperating and trying to help you trace them, how is it going to work without that? I think they did it because Obama wanted to gin up support for new gun laws in America and say, look at all these American guns that are turning up in Mexico. And I think he and Holder did it for that reason. And I'm curious whether the president knew what Holder was doing or whether Holder pulled off a stunt like this as attorney general without any knowledge from the boss up above.
Well, we know that in 2012, the president claimed executive privilege to all this information. And I have to tell you, the best piece I've seen is out of the New Boston Post from April 15, 2016, where it is that the operation, the politics, the cover-up, and then the 20,000 documents that were originally released. And we should tell... We should acknowledge that those 20,500 documents did not satisfy Jason Chaffetz or Chuck Grassley, one from the House, obviously Congressman Chaffetz and Senator Grassley, and two committees. They kept fighting for what now was finally released today, with the Attorney General making the good decision to release it. But there's no question. This goes all the way through again to the question of who really runs the government. Is the government run by our elected leaders, or by the people they appoint, who then become powerful in a way that really threatens kind of our way of life in this country. Had it not been for the tragic death of Brian Terry, we wouldn't even have known about this, the fact that these guns were run into Mexico. It was two of the weapons that were traced back to his death that actually led all of this to happen, and all the early on lies about the fact that there was no such operation. Oh, yeah, there was one, but we didn't allow too many guns. Well, we allowed a lot of guns. And they just went on and on and on. And even the FBI said that they told the Department of Justice and ATF that they shouldn't even talk about how many pages of real documents there were when they released the 20,500. So this really hurts a guy who spent his whole life in law enforcement running legitimate operations. The tactics here were terrible, but what followed was criminal.
Well, was it legal to do what they did?
Well, we have to ask that, because in the end, you know, after the operation went sideways, and that was in December 2010. In 2011, they indicted 20 federally licensed dealers who sold those guns. They did that. You can guess why they did that. The fact is, they probably told them to sell them, but to cover their situation, they went back and indicted these 20 federally licensed dealers.
But didn't the dealers do it at the direction of the DOJ?
They did.
Yeah,
they did.
That's
they
what
did.
I thought.
How can you're asking me about the legality of it? You know, that's probably a little bit above my pay grade in terms of what's allowed in those kind of investigations. But in a criminal investigation, to allow an unlawful act to entrap something else is obviously not legal.
Bernie.
Yeah.
If you went out and got a confidential, reliable informant, a CRA. And you said, we need to do a couple of buys out of this house to show that it is a house so we can get a warrant, go bust the house. Mm-hmm. So you send a crook in, or, you know, either a cop or somebody who's a drug dealer in to make a buy. You can do a couple of buys if you're doing it in aid of directly, you know, looking for the information to be able to get a warrant, right?
Well, that's true, but the situation turns on very fine points about when we are allowed to do something at this scale without a warrant,
right.
without some kind of oversight authority to do this kind of thing. And this typically, if it were going to happen at the local level, would have to come from a very high okay to do that. In our case, probably the district attorney would have to say okay. In the case of Department of Justice, it's at least the AG, if not the President of the United States, that would have to say, yes, this is going to be allowed to ship illegal weapons internationally. And we're talking about the weapons we know about are the semi-automatic weapons like AR-15s that have full automatic selectors, or maybe even more higher-powered weapons. Doesn't matter. The two guns that killed Brian Terry are the reason we even know about it. Otherwise, we'd have never known about it.
Well, when all this comes out, do you suspect there will be enough material in there, perhaps, to bring charges against Holder? Because I've reminded folks that Holder is the first constitutionally elected, I mean, in other words, an official whose job is mentioned in the Constitution, to have been found in contempt of Congress. That's the first time that's ever happened in American history. This guy did some bad things. So if this comes out and shows that he knew about this operation and signed off on it, can he be prosecuted for that?
Yeah, he certainly can be. And you know that Jason Chaffetz is no longer in Congress, and Chuck Grassley remains there. But those two people, and even now Jason Chaffetz, who is a contributor on a particular network, actually has stuck with this all the way through. And I'm sure there are people still waiting in Congress, including Daryl Issa from California, who are going to see this through one way or the other. The situation is that the Lanny Brewer, the guy I was talking about earlier, he was the head of the criminal division at the time this happened for the Department of Justice. He'd been there since 2009 and then conveniently kind of left town in 2013 after this whole thing fell apart, back to the private sector. But I'm going to tell you that in my estimation, that those names that were lied to in Congress are not going to let this go, and we have a president that probably is not going to be very encouraged to kind of be forgiving in this situation.
I would hope not. Bernie, thanks for the time. We always appreciate your insights.
Thanks, Lars.
You bet. That's Bernie Giusto, a retired Multnomah County Sheriff and a legal expert for the Lars Larson Show. We'll be back in a moment. Your calls at 866-439-5277 and emails talk@LarsLarson.com. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Calls to 866-439-5277. Naysayers always go first on this program. We are live throughout the Pacific Northwest in Idaho, Washington, and Oregon. Our Twitter poll question today, found at LarsLarson.com and on Twitter at Lars Larson Show. Is it discrimination to refuse to sell guns to those under 21 and above the age of 18? Now, the story broke while I took a couple of days of vacation for my 59th birthday, which was Tuesday, and had some fun with family and friends. So is it discrimination? I made that comment right after this happened when Dick's and Fred Meyer and a number of other companies came out and announced, we're not going to sell guns to those Americans who are old enough to have them, old enough to sign up for the military, in fact, 18 years of age, but they would not sell until that person reached 21. And I said, I don't think you can discriminate. And I had a lot of folks, including amateur lawyers, I'm an amateur non-lawyer, say, well, you can discriminate under the age of 40. Well, that's generally true in employment, although I'd love to see the case someday where somebody says, you fired me because I'm too young. If I have the experience, I don't think that would be legal because the laws of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, and most of the states in the country are laws that say you can't discriminate based on age, race, national origin, skin color, physical disability, etc. So is it discrimination to refuse to sell guns to those under 21? There is now a lawsuit, a case that's being brought in the state of Oregon in this case, regarding the Bureau of Labor and Industry saying you can't discriminate that way. And a lot of you have made the comparison saying, well, if you can't refuse to bake a cake for somebody, how in the world can you refuse to sell a gun to somebody who is legally old enough to be able to buy it? Let's go to Barbara in Seattle. Hey, Barbara, welcome to the Lars Larson Show on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. I just want to know, what do I say to my Democrat relatives who say the only answer to stop gun violence in the schools is to outlaw
ARs and assault rifles or whatever.
Okay, I can tell you a couple of things. First of all, AR doesn't stand for assault rifle. It stands for Armalite, which is just a company name from a long time ago. Secondly, the deadliest, you know, the deadliest people in this country are do not commit their murders with rifles. They commit them with pistols. Pistols are used in about 10,000 murders per year in the United States. Rifles are used in about 250. Now, 250 is still 250 too many. But if you were going to go after a problem, any kind of problem, a medical problem, a physical problem, whatever, would you go after the thing that's causing most of the damage or the thing that's causing the least damage first? The fact is that the folks who are anti-gun are anti-all guns. And getting rid of AR-50, if you stopped, and here's the second point that I should make, Barbara. Do you understand that the gutless cowards, and they are gutless cowards, who propose a ban on the sale of AR-15s are merely saying, don't sell any more of them, right? So, yeah. Well, the thing is, if you really think that's what's causing the problem to have a lot of guns available, it's not. But if you thought that was the reason, you'd say then ban the possession of such rifles because there are 5 million of them in this country. If you stop selling any more, you still have 5 million out there. If you think that's the problem, then ban the possession of AR-15s. Now, I don't say that because I agree with such a ban. I'm merely saying if you want to stop the problem, then stop the problem. And if you ask some of these gun grabbers, including a few Republicans, but mostly Democrats, why don't you ban the possession of all AR-15s? They would tell you because we'd never get away with that. So how does that address the problem, since an awful lot of the people who use these have used these guns illegally to murder people are using guns that are stolen or guns that are obtained in some other manner than just going in and buying them? Nicholas Cruz did buy his, and James Holmes in Aurora, Colorado bought his. The young man who shot people at the Clackamas Town Center a few years ago, he didn't own one of those guns. He stole it from a roommate. And so changing the sale of them is not going to change anything at all. And yet, the very folks who will tell you all day long that they want to stop the sale of these guns, if you bring up possession, say, why don't you make that illegal? Propose that. That is so politically unpopular that they know they would never get it. And yet, that shows them to be gutless cowards. I mean, if you were worried about your son or daughter driving the car, you might say, you can't drive the car anymore. But you wouldn't say you can't drive the car on Friday nights, but you can drive it every other night of the week. If you honestly think your son or daughter is a dangerous driver, you don't let them drive the car at all. If you only ban them from driving the car one night a week, what good is that going to do? And yet that's precisely what the anti-gun crowd wants to do. But they plan to chip away at the Second Amendment until eventually I think they hope to get rid of it altogether. And some of them have actually proposed that recently. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'll be glad to take your phone calls and your emails. By the way, tomorrow we're going to do First Amendment Friday live from Longview, Washington at Chinook Tractor, since we have some good friends at Chinook Tractor, and then we're going to do a little cigar event afterwards. They agreed to do that, and that should be a lot of fun. Stop by. We'll be doing both radio shows there. But glad to be with you on the Radio Northwest Network, serving Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. And always glad to welcome back to the program Greg Wooldridge, who is running for governor of the state of Oregon. Greg, we've had you on before. There are 17 people running for governor of Oregon. What should we make of that, first of all, before we get to your candidacy?
That's enough for a big football squad, isn't it?
It is.
We have a starting lineup, and I don't know. I don't know what to make of it, Lars. I know there's just a handful of us that have been in it and have really charged forward. I'm getting a lot of momentum. I'm just fired up, and all those numbers, they've got a steep hill to climb. Mine's not as steep, but we are just racing up it right now.
Well, and in fact, one of the benchmarks that candidates for governor or candidates for any office, if they're running in the state of Oregon, try to hit is they go to the Dorchester Conference because there's a straw poll there. Now, it's not a scientific poll, but these are highly politically active people that go to the Dorchester every year, which has been around for decades. And who won that Dorchester poll?
A nice loaded question. Thank
sure,
you, sir.
Of course.
You know, it's kind of a moderate group, too, which makes it even more delightful for a conservative like me. I went in thinking I might get a strong third, And I won it. I won it by 11 points over my nearest competitor. So, boy, that's what a great up that one is.
Well, and that's the thing I'd like you to differentiate. We've had Dr. Newt Bueller on, and he's running as well. And you two are probably the top candidates out of the many candidates that are now running. So what are the major differences between you and Newt Bueller?
Let me describe that by telling you about me. I have a lot of energy, a lot of enthusiasm. And I bring my leadership skills that I learned in the military and beyond to this race. And I think that's what the voters are thirsting for, is somebody to lead the state out of the morass it's in. And I'm demonstrating that in all regards, rather than pointing out my differences. Of course, I'm a conservative. Newt's more moderate than I. We take different positions on different things. And I think mine are perhaps more popular with the Republican voters right now. And I also think that mine are such that we could, I relish the opportunity to take on Kate Brown, even with my, and not even with, but with the strength of my beliefs.
Well, and in fact, let's get into some of the specifics because people want to know those. I mean, when it comes down to voting, I would guess that the average voter, even a highly engaged voter, is going to look at probably five or six major characteristics. One is, as you mentioned, your history in the United States Navy as a pilot and as the three times commander, former leader of the Blue Angels. You've got command presence. You've got command ability. What else is different about the way you'd approach, say, taxes or energy? Or some of the other problems that are facing this state and this region?
Well, I tell you, the tax issue, I think we need to do what Dennis Richardson has done, and that's identify shortcomings in our various agencies, the waste and the mismanagement of funding in the multi-hundreds of millions of dollars. Get that under control. Then we can take a look at where we need to apply our taxes. I don't think we need to raise taxes. I think we need to control the spending and do it properly and really shepherd the Oregonians' money they're sending to us and make it work better for us. You know, and the business tax, small business tax, that loophole that the Trump administration provided for us in the tax breaks, we need to be able to take advantage of that in Oregon. And yes, a few less taxes, but the business it'll create will certainly make up for that loss.
Well, in fact, let me ask you about energy, because this morning I was reading a long piece out of the Seattle Times Fish Wrapper, and they did this piece in which they talked about this guy who's trying to develop a new energy storage mechanism. It's pump storage. It's been around for decades in different parts of the country where you pump water uphill, and then when you need the energy, you let it roll back down. It's not terribly efficient, but they're saying we need to have this because our future is in wind and solar and these other alternatives. And yet they don't they say the region is moving away from old fashioned fossil fuels. They even say we're moving away from it in transportation, like automobiles and trucks. And yet I don't see that happening. We have abundant oil. It's coming at a relatively affordable price. And it may be that the elites like Governor Inslee and Governor Brown are moving away or say they want to move away from fossil fuels. But the average consumer isn't. The average consumer looks at natural gas as a great way to heat his house. Gasoline or diesel is a great way to power his car or his truck. And I don't see the average person doing that. It's just the elites who tend to ride around in much nicer vehicles than some of the average taxpayers do.
I agree with you 100%. One thing that people don't look at it is how, with these electric vehicles, how do you create the energy to provide that electricity? Some of it is water through the dams, but a lot of it is still through fossil fuels to create that electrical power to put it into your cars. And I don't see a lot of people jumping to that. You know, gas powered engines have, you know, the technology there is incredible, and cut down on the amount of fuel that you burn. That's the way to go. And I would look at natural gas. Natural gas is going to come pouring into here when we get the Jordan Cove LNG plant built down in Coos Bay. I'm not sure if you know about that.
No, I do. Believe me.
That's an incredible project that will just incredibly boost the economy in Southern Oregon. But issues like that, where we can bring natural gas in, that's a great resource for fuel, too. I'm not sure that the renewable sources are really going to help us.
I'm talking to Greg Wooldridge, who is a retired Navy captain, former leader of the Blue Angels, on that Jordan Cove project. I think that fits in with a bunch of the other projects in the region. We've had the region say no to LNG export off the Columbia, no or no so far to doing it on the Southern Oregon coast. We've said no to the biggest single oil transport terminal in the world, which could have been built in Vancouver. We've said no to a methanol plant in Tacoma. It's as though the leadership of both region, of both Oregon and Washington, are saying no to anything and everything that includes any component, major component of fossil fuels. I want to know what your administration would do should you become governor.
Elect me governor, and we will take a balanced look at preserving the environment while providing jobs and creating the best possible conditions for people of Oregon. The LNG plant, the export out of Jordan Cove is a super example of that. Clean, even the people against coal are in favor of that LNG exporting plant because it'll send clean energy to Asia, and it won't be sending fossil fuel burning, if you will, the coal burning. Well, I think coal is a great resource too. But we need to get that plant built and get it built soon. It's what's nice about it is FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, had been turning it down, Jordan Cove, all these years. Now that our man Donald Trump is there, that tune is changing, and we're getting state permits, and it's going to happen.
What was your position on President Trump when he was running?
When he was running, I favored the things that he was going to do to make America the way it should be. I just really approve of what his plans are and how he's pursued them. Now, his style, it's different, not mine, obviously. So you can talk about his style all day, which a lot of the legacy media likes to do, but let's talk about his accomplishments. And so when I saw what he wanted to do, I saw the momentum he had, he was the guy.
All right, let's talk about one last thing, and that's schools. Almost half the state budget goes to fund public schools. So does a third of local property taxes. It's an expensive proposition. And so far, it's a failing proposition in the state. We have a dropout rate or a failure to graduate rate that's close to the bottom in America. And yet we spend a lot of money, north of $12,000 per year per student. How would you fix the schools?
Start out with negotiating with the unions a bit on try to get some realistic ways of putting the money back toward the students and empowering parents to get involved. There's a couple other things I'm interested in education, and that is to get the trades back into the upper levels of school. Make it not an exception, but make it a norm where starting in 10th grade, you have an opportunity to do the trades. And I see that as a way to secure young people in schools and get them interested and get them to stay and then have a viable workforce available as they graduate. The funding of the schools, that's a challenge. You know, we've got to work on the purse problem because a lot of the money comes from that. We also, for the rural communities, we need to work on the ONC timber. We need to get the feds to let us get in there and get that so we can get the ONC money flowing again for Southern Oregon, Eastern Oregon. So there's a lot of issues, Lars, as you know. I mean, it's not a one-stop shop to fix the school issue, the school problem.
Captain, what's your website?
WooldridgeForOregon.com.
That's WooldridgeE. Captain, it's always a pleasure. I know we'll talk again soon. Thanks very much for the time today.
Thank you, Lars. Appreciate it.
You bet. That's retired Navy Captain Greg Wooldridge running for governor of Oregon, actually running first for the Republican nomination. Back in just a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Calling all cars.
There's a long line of cars, and they're trying to...
This is the War on the Car.
You might want to buckle up.
On the Lars Larson Show.
Well, I consider it part of the War on the Car because the leadership in the Pacific Northwest states has been trying for the last three or four decades to tell you that mass transit is the way to go. You don't want that individual automobile that takes you exactly where you want to go, when you want to go. You want to be riding the bus and taking two or three times as long and being dropped off three or four blocks away from where you're going and getting on three or four blocks away from where you board. Well, here's what TriMet's doing. TriMet is trying to make this TriMet, as far as I'm concerned, is like the mom who has to tie a pork chop around her kid's neck to get the dog to play with him. TriMet is trying to say, oh, please come ride, even if you ride illegally, even if you don't ride the bus right now, we want you to ride it now. And if you do it illegally, if you don't buy a ticket, we're going to drop the fines dramatically. Well, you're going to drop the fines? How much? Well, they are $175 if you get caught not paying. A fair evader. You're stealing service, not from a private company, but from the public. And it's already a smoking deal to begin with because none of the capital costs are paid by the fare box that the rider pays. the rider pays maybe 20% of the operating cost of the bus. It's a very sweet deal. And they've had literally an explosion of people riding without paying. They're like, I don't want to pay. Somebody else is going to pay the bill for me. Well, TriMet is a transit agency that is very deeply in debt, like a lot of them. They have about $1 billion in unfunded mandates, meaning they promised to pay medical and pensions and everything else, and they're $1 billion in the hole, and they don't have a way to pay it. If they were to start, if they had to cut their current service enough, say $50 million a year for the next 20 years to pay that $1 billion back, they would be making sizable cuts to bus service. Well, they can't do that because then they can't say, look how essential we are. Look how many people we carry. So instead, they're saying, go ahead, ride it without paying. We're going to drop the fine from $175 to $75 for the first offense, and then it works its way back up if you keep offending. But as we pointed out last week with Bernie Giusto, they've also said, but if you're somebody who's not very wealthy, if you're somebody who doesn't have a lot of money, we may just waive the fine altogether. Well, they've effectively said, please ride us for free, and we won't do anything about it. I think that's crazy, and it's part of the war on the car. Cars are amazingly popular right now, and mass transit has seen declining ridership in per capita ridership over the last 30 years. Cecil's on the line from Gig Harbor, listening on KVI. Hey, Cecil, welcome to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, thanks for taking my phone call.
You bet.
I'm a federal firearms licensee, and I conduct business out of my home down here in Gig Harbor.
Yeah.
And I'm calling regarding the 80% rifle and pistol lowers.
Yeah, the gentleman we had on, Cody Wilson.
About that about a couple of years ago, about selling an 80% built firearm. And according to the ATF, if you want to sell an 80% lower that you've built yourself, it has to be done through an FFL such as me. You also have to put your name and address on the lower, or, you know, it has to be on the gun itself. The FFL has to put it on their books, and then a background check has to be performed on the buyer or whoever you want to sell.
Cecil, I'm curious. Can I stop you for a second and ask you a question?
Sure.
Usually when you call a federal agency and ask them for legal advice, they say, we do not give legal advice. But it sounds to me like ATF gave you legal advice and said you can rely on it.
Well, it's on their website. It took me, this didn't just happen, you know, in a few minutes. It took me quite a while of going from person to person to actually find somebody to talk to in regards to
that. Well, did you talk to somebody or is it on their website?
It's both. I talked to a person, and I'm not at home right now. I have it all.
Don't worry about that. I just want to know, they gave you legal advice on how that law is interpreted. Because that's usually,
exactly.
you call the IRS and ask them for legal, can I do this on my taxes? They're going to say, we don't give advice like that. But if they did, okay, so be it. This man, obviously, he's in court right now Distributed Direct to make the legal case that maybe the federal agencies have not had the right approach to this.
Well, see, the thing about it is if you can only do so many of those a year, and I believe it's only one that you can sell like that per year. If you do any more than that, then you have to go get a manufacturer's license.
And he made that point in the interview. But what he was talking about the finished product. In other words, he makes the lowers and sells them as a business.
Right.
But they're not a gun. They're not a serial numbered part of that point. You do the last 20% of the work, correct?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So they've made it to 80% of the way. They send it back to you and they say, here are the directions. If you sit down and do these operations yourself, you own the lower. Can you sell that lower?
Right. Only if you do what I described that you at the beginning of the phone call.
Well, but
you
here's
can't just take it to your friend and sell it to your
hold
friend.
Hold on, Cecil. Here's a clarification, though. When you're an FFL, right?
Right.
So when you do a sale transaction, you write on the transaction what the serial number is of the gun, right?
Correct.
What do you write on it when you're selling one that doesn't have a serial number?
You, like I said, if you've built that firearm yourself.
Yeah.
And you want to go sell it, you have to then put your name and address somehow, stamp them on the lower itself.
So not a serial number, but a name and address that's going to... So if I sell one a year, they're all going to say Lars Larson on them.
Exactly, they are. That's right.
Well, that's not much of a serial number, is it?
You put the gun together. What's that?
That's not much of a serial number.
That's right. But once it goes to the dealer, like me, whatever serial number you put on it, you can put one on it if you want, number one, because it'll be Lars Larson number one. And if you do it like in another year, you want to do another one, you can do number two.
Do you have any firearms lawyers who say that the ATF is right about that?
No, the person that I spoke to at the ATF, and like I said, I have it all written down. Her title was actually judge.
Okay. Hold that thought a second. Cecil, thanks for the call. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. Cecil was on the phone from Gig Harbor listening on KVI, and he was telling me what he had heard from a woman who identified herself as a judge. Cecil, can I be honest with you?
Absolutely.
All right. First of all, when you call almost any government agency, if you call the local police bureau and say, what's the best kind of lock to put my front door? They routinely say, we aren't allowed to endorse one thing or another. If you call the IRS and say, am I allowed to set up this kind of company and then deduct my, you know, take this off my taxes this way? They're going to say, we don't give legal advice. And when you call people, if this woman was a judge, an actual federal judge of some kind or an administrative law judge, first of all, it would have been quite a trick to get somebody like that on the phone. And secondly, most judges do not want to say, I'm going to prejudge something that may come before me to be decided. In fact, that's true of most, you know, regular garden variety judges, petty court judges or circuit court judges or superior court judges. They say, I can't give you an opinion on something that's a legal matter because I may have that case in front of me in a week or a month. And so I'm really curious who you ended up talking to at the ATF that was willing to give you a legal opinion. Now, I know that their default position is probably, well, anything you need to do with a gun, you have to come to us. And I know that's going to be. But one of the reasons this company that we were talking to, the one that makes the lowers and then supplies them to people and also has the printable gun, and they've allowed plans for that gun that you can run through a CNC machine or run through a printer and make a printable gun. They've allowed their whole fight with the ATF is whether or not the ATF has a right to tell them you can't give this away and you can't sell this. So I think the reason they're in court is there are still some legal questions about what's legal and what's not. Wouldn't surprise me a bit if a federal agency said, well, anything you do, you have to go through us. But that's kind of their default position.
I understand that. And I know the ATF, I know how they operate. And what I was thinking of is when I get home, I thought what I would do was get my file out that I've got all that in and maybe email you the information, because I made sure I wrote it all down and saved it all, because I get this question from people from, you know, time after time, especially since you can do it with both ARs and you can do it with pistol lowers now. So, and I wanted to make sure I was giving people credible information. And
right. So do I. And I'm glad for the information. I know there's likely to be some kind of fight probably in court over whether one thing is legal or another thing is legal. Heck, the state of Oregon tried to make it illegal for Mossberg to sell its Shockwave, not a shotgun, it's any other weapon, because the state of Oregon said, well, we have the authority to regulate that. You know what? It took them 4 months, but they finally figured out, hey, come to find out, we don't have the authority to regulate that. But boy, were they telling all the gun stores, you know, in Oregon at the beginning of that period, May of last year, why, we have the right to regulate that. And they didn't know what the hell they were talking about.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me with Oregon or Washington, for that matter.
But, I mean, I guess I'd go to this. When I was going to have a longer interview with him, and we got a lot of things stacked up today. We want to have him back at some point to really dig into this. But here's my question to you. So you get a lower. You finish doing all the work. It's an 80% lower. You finish doing the work. You put your AR-15 together, right? One day you pass away. What happens to that gun? Is the gun allowed to be willed to somebody in your family because it has no serial number on it?
Right. That was the second part of the question that I asked them. And in that case, the gun would have to be destroyed.
Okay.
I mean, and that's coming from the ATF. Now, I'm not saying I agree with any of that.
No, I think I take the ATF with a grain of salt, and I'm not even an FFL, right. So...
Right, but I do too. But I have had some questions. I've had my license for 8 years, and every time I've had
you know, some questions. They have been very helpful, you know, guiding me through certain things. So, but I am like you. I do take what they say with a grain of salt, but it, what I stated earlier is also on their website. It, you know, it's in their, they're not really laws. They're ATF, I don't know if you want to call them suggestions or rules. That's what they are.
Well, and Cecil, you can see why I'd be even more skeptical of that. Because I've literally called public agencies in both Washington and Oregon and said, I'm making a formal public records request for X, for a document. And they'll say, no, you can't have it. And I say, well, it says right here in the law, I can have it. Can you cite the part of the law that says you don't have to release it? And they'll say, they literally will say, well, that's the way we've always done it. So they're like that guy Tevyev in Fiddler on the Roof. Tradition, you know, so all of a sudden tradition takes, the, I mean, I honestly, I think... I would think that if I worked in one of those agencies, I say, boss, we can't just tell people this is the way we've always done it, because there were lots of things that that both the federal and state government did that were illegal, and it was always the way they'd always done it. You know, that for a long, my friend Ann Rule was a Seattle cop, but she worked in the women and children's division. Why? Because that's where all the women worked, in the women and children's division here on International Women's Day. And they had no problem with saying, we don't have to have a rule. We just say all the women who are cops work in the women's division. They don't work anywhere else because that's the way we've always done it. I'm deeply suspicious of agencies that say that's the way we've always done it.
Well, yes, and you know, the ATF, they also want to make sure that they have their thumb on where every gun is. You know, they want to make sure that they know what's going on with every firearm that we all own. I know that's the position that they take.
And I know they probably hate the idea of the ghost gun or the gun that the lower that doesn't have a serial number on it. So the only question then is, if it's currently legal to own a gun without a serial number on it, you know, if you don't get into the business of selling them, then why wouldn't it be legal for you to leave that thing, which is not a gun under the ATF's rules, to somebody in your family and say, I don't need to transfer this. It doesn't have a serial number. It really can't be transferred. There's no process for putting a serial number on it. So I'm going to leave it to my grandson or my granddaughter.
Right.
And if they say, well, you can't do that. Well, show me the law. Point to the statute or the federal regulation that says I can't do that. And if they can't point to that, the fact that they say this is a suggestion tells me, especially if you're talking to a judge who deals with nothing but rules and regulations and statutes all day long, if she didn't say to you, by the way, here's the statute, it's U.S. Code 18, blah, 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 then it sounds to me as though they're kind of pulling it out of their ear.
Well, then that could be. It is the ATF, after all.
Well, and again, I'm sure there are good people who work in the ATF, but they do have interesting history on a bunch of different things. So, I don't know. I don't plan to get one right now. I don't know. Who knows? I might get one in the future, but I don't have any plans to get one now. But I kind of wonder about the people who've decided to get one, and then they're told, well, you're in this weird legal limbo because nobody seems to know for sure what the rules are, right?
Right, right. Well, and I think most people that do build them they don't have any intentions of selling them later on. They're just building them because they want to have this firearm, and it's kind of cool that they, you know, they can say, hey, look, I did, you know, they didn't do all the work, but they did most of the work, and there is a little bit of skill involved in putting one of those things together.
That's true. I mean, I have the parts for a full-on AR that has a serial number and all that, and I haven't put it together. I'm waiting for one of my friends up in Vancouver who runs a store that does nothing but that to sit down with me and put it together because I'm not a gunsmith. You know, and the AR-15 is a pretty simple weapon, but even still, I'm not going to put it together on my own and then run rounds through it. That just doesn't seem like a good idea. I want to go to somebody who knows how to do it. But here's the thing I'd like to say about what you mentioned about people own them because they're cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I think that is? That's a little bit of what I think we have too little of in America, and that is somebody who says, hey, I've got something. I never plan to commit a crime. I'm not doing anything wrong, but I really enjoy the idea that I'm not under the thumb of a government, which is supposed to serve me, but too often a government that runs roughshod over my rights. I think that's why people have decided, as you say, I want to own one of these and not be under the watchful eye of the ATF.
Exactly.
It's called freedom, and I appreciate it. Cecil, thank you very much. I appreciate the call. Back in a moment. Your call's welcome at 866-439-5277. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on the Radio Northwest Network. I know I was off for a couple of days, and I appreciate your patience with that. I was just having a little vacation. It was around my birthday. When you turn 59, you can take a day off and a couple of days off and spend some time with your family and your grandbaby. And if you want to see pictures of her, there's a really cute one I put up on Twitter, at Lars Larson Show. I got this email from Greg. Totally off of everything else we've been talking about today. Lars, ban the box is a bunch of Bernie Sanders. I think he means BS. I called a potential employer to inquire if they hire felons. She informed me that she cannot discuss this. I have to apply for the job first. And then he offered, and then be offered a position. What a waste of my time and the time of the company. Exactly. Can you imagine? I told you this is what was going to happen. At the time they proposed banning the box, I said, so some poor guy or gal is going to go down, fill out the paperwork, get his hopes up, think, I might land this job. And they'll say, why, we interview everyone. And then when they actually offer you the job, they'll say, oh, by the way, now that we've offered you the job, we have to check. Are you a felon? Because if you're a felon, we can't hire you. But we have to offer you the job first and really get your hopes up and then tell you, sorry, it's Lucy and Charlie Brown in the football, if you're old enough to remember that example. By the way, tonight, Steve Novick, the left hook of Left Hook Right Jab, and I will be facing off on Channel 8 in the 6 o'clock news hour. We're going to have some fun. We're going to talk about a few things tonight, and it should be a good face-off between Steve Novick and me. It's Left Hook Right Jab on KGW in the 6 o'clock hour. Hey, David Cross, welcome to the program, and thanks for holding down the fort every week, delivering a little bit of information about what's going on with illegal aliens in the region. Well, what have you got for us this week?
Lars, we have a criminal alien out of Washington State. His name was allegedly Rosaldo Ramos Ramos. He was charged with allegedly decapitating his cousin and stabbing him to death back in January.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to figure out the immigration status of this guy, so I contacted our friend at Immigration Customs Enforcement, Jasmine Pitts O'Keefe. And it turns out this guy's actual name was Julio Ramos, and he's a five-time previously deported Honduran national, and he apparently been in custody of the Kent Police Department previously. ICE had placed a detainer on him, but they released him before ICE could take him into custody. So approximately 3 months later, he was arrested for the alleged murder of his cousin. And of course, you and I both know that King County, Washington has been basically declared a sanctuary county, and federal immigration is really having difficulty getting local law enforcement to communicate with ICE on the immigration status of people they take into custody.
You know, I'm wondering, the next time I get one of the sheriffs on, either the Ozzie Knezovich from Spokane or the sheriff from King County or the sheriff from Multnomah County, the current sheriff, all the way along they've said we have to be a sanctuary because we have to get along with the Latino community. And if we arrest Latinos who are illegal aliens, then the Latinos who are law-abiding citizens will not like us. A logic I've never understood. I want to start asking them this question. Are you going to do what the Oakland mayor did? If you have to get along with the Latino or Latina community, are you going to warn people ahead of time when an ICE raid is happening? And if so, how do you justify that knowing that in Oakland, the result of that was that 800 people were not arrested who would have been arrested, and 165 of them were serious violent felons, you know, murderers, rapists, robbery people. And how do you justify that in your community, telling the community, we want these serious criminals to continue running around the community loose when we could have them removed because we have to get along with the Latino community? And frankly, if I remember the Latino community, I'd be insulted. I'd say, you know, you're saying to me that you're trying to become my friend by not arresting somebody who's a criminal and I'm here legally and you're putting me in the same boat just because I share the ethnicity of the criminal. It'd be like the sheriff of King County saying, we're not going to arrest serial killers because most serial killers are 30 to 50 year old white men. And so therefore, since much of the community is made up of 30 to 50 year old white men, we can't be on their good side if we start arresting a few of them that happen to be serial killers. It's the same kind of crazy logic.
Well, Lars, if law enforcement had been fully cooperating with ICE, Pedro Venegas Ramos, This man who was killed would very likely be alive because this guy had been deported 5 times. He would have been in custody of ICE. There's almost an impossibility that he had been released where he could go out and kill somebody.
Well, I got to tell you, this is getting crazy. David, thanks for the update. We very much appreciate it.
Thank you, Lars. Have a great day.
You bet. That's David Cross, who comes on every week with an update on illegal alien activities. I want to tell you one thing that came up in the last couple of hours. There's been an announcement that South Korea is going to make a major announcement at about 4 o'clock Pacific time this afternoon, 7 o'clock in the east. South Korea is going to make a major announcement with regard to North Korea. I'm going to tell you what I think it is. I think there was a trial balloon on this about a week ago. For all the other presidents, including Clinton and Bush and Obama and now Trump, Trump is the first president to be able to get the South and the North, perhaps, to be able to sit down and actually talk about denuclearizing or at least slowing down the production of nuclear weapons and missiles by North Korea. I suspect that that's what South Korea is going to announce, but we'll find out about an hour from now whether or not this is the result. But if this is the result, here's the thing I want you to remember. When you turn on your local news on television, you turn on your local news on radio, and they do not mention that 3, maybe 4 previous presidents have tried to get something done about North Korea and its nuclear missile ambitions, and all of them failed. Obama failed, George W. failed, and Billy Clinton failed. And now the president they hate the most, Donald J. Trump, has made it happen. I'm just waiting for the lefty crazies to say, well, this is all because Obama got it started. Yeah, right. You got the Lars Larson Show.